Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Here's your host, the president of New York's largest independent union, Suffolk AME's Dan Levler.
Welcome to another edition of Suffolk Matters on Walk 97.5 and 94.3 The Shark, where Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News and views you can't hear anywhere else.
So my guest this morning is Dominic Thorne. He's the legislator in the 7th District for Suffolk County. Good morning, Dominic. Thank you for sharing your time with us this morning.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
So, you know, just getting into this, you're starting your second term as a county legislator. And for our listeners, you know, let's just get a little background of what you did before you became a legislator. And then we'll talk about the district a little.
So by and large, before coming to the public sector, I worked the majority of my adult life as EMS, as an advanced life support provider in this county, both paid and volunteer, as well as I have a secondary thing that I do with that I did, where I ran a major corporation's automotive repair company. So I would be a troubleshooting manager. When there was a problem in a service department, they would send me in to retrain mechanics and test staff to make sure the customer had the best experience possible.
Yeah, so, I mean, listen, on the EMS side, at least, you know from emergency situations, you know, and I you know, as I participate in the legislature in Suffolk County and we see some conversations get heated and some situations get heated, there's some tension or whatever, but you know the real-world difference between, you know, life and death and something that, you know, people are passionate about, but maybe isn't quite so life and death. And that's, you know, I guess gives you some balance when you're there and you're speaking on different topics.
Well, you know, what I said from day one that I was going to do is to make sure that we take any of the anger out of the conversation and just talk about facts, right?
Right.
Because when you start getting defensive and yelling at people or yelling back to people, I don't know how effective that is. And it also makes what could be a very fruitful conversation more confrontational than productive. And I'd rather have a productive conversation.
No, that's very
more
true.
More conversations, less arguments, right?
Yeah, no, it's true. You shut people down, you know, when someone feels like they don't have a voice and then they become defensive and then things turn, you know, accusatory as opposed to, like you say, having a productive dialogue. That's a good point.
Right. And, you know, the other day, too, I am the legislator of all the people all of the time.
Yes.
In my district.
Yeah.
Whether I agree with them or not, I'm still their elected official.
Yeah, I talk about that. I talk about that a lot here on this show. When someone gets elected in a district, you know, they may be elected primarily by people with, you know, with their particular party in mind. Right. But the fact of the matter is when you get elected to a district, there are folks that maybe voted for someone else, but they still have, you know, their needs need to be met. And that becomes tricky, not just in the district, but when you're sitting, you know, general legislative meeting, you've got all the legislators there and you're talking about issues that maybe aren't even in your district and you've got to weigh in, you've got to, you know, have a voice and you don't really consider whether or not, you know, the issue is partisan one way or the other. It's about the people.
Right. It doesn't make sense for the taxpayers. Doesn't make sense for safety. Doesn't make sense to maybe take a step into uncomfortable conversations so you can have the conversation. When you have the conversation, you're able to move forward.
No, very true. Let's learn a little bit about your district. What areas does that encompass?
So with the redistricting, now I have all of Belport, and then I head down to the west to all of Blue Point, all of the Patchogues, probably about 90% of Bedford community, and into the great community of Gordon Heights as well. And, of course, now I have all of the Fire Island communities, and anything that's in the town of Brookhaven is in my legislative district at this point.
Wow, and that's, you know, I mean, that's a hot topic right now. I mean, obviously,
oh, yeah.
we saw some heavy rainfall the other day, and we saw some footage, you know, from you know, I'll call it the mainland Long Island. But Fire Island got hit pretty hard.
Yes, they got hit remarkably hard. You know, I was over there with the county executive in one of the Iceland town departments. I am constantly in contact with my town partners, certainly our OEM. We get daily reports and I am scheduled to go back over there. I've been over there about four times. It's not always necessarily about a photo op, and I don't much care about the photo op. I need to put my eyes on things over there so
absolutely.
I know when we're sitting in a meeting exactly what has to happen.
That matters. You know, it really does. Yeah, and it's something that, you know, conversations I've had with, you know, both yourself and other legislators. You know, when we talk about certain things, and especially when we're talking about departments and how they function, you mentioned OEM, that's the Office of Emergency Management. Those are AME members. But mm-hmm. we talk about various departments, and I say, listen, come to the department, see what we're talking about. And that's a big thing. So, you know, heading out to Fire Island and putting your eyes on things informs you in a way that a picture wouldn't. You know, you get to see and have real world interactions. And that's, you know, I don't know if everybody realizes that that's part of a legislator's job. You know, we half joke about, you know, the concept of a legislator in Suffolk County being a part-time job, but not if you're doing it, right? The constituent services, yeah. all of the traveling you have to do, all of the different events that you go to make sure that you're seeing people in your community, understanding their needs. You know, it's a lot of work.
Well, you know, I had heard that obviously before about it being a part-time job. I routinely put in about 70 to 80 hours a week easily.
Easy, yep.
I have many communities with a lot of needs. So, again, if you're not in the street, you know, you can take a phone call, you can go out and look at the hole in the ground. You can hear how people in despair in any particular neighborhood, but until you meet with them and talk with them and find out what the root cause is, you really don't get a good feel and then have some kind of game plan to address the issues that they're raising. And that's why, you know, 78 hours a week is an easy week for me.
Right. Listen, getting back to the damage out in Fire Island, I mean, we know that there was extensive damage and that recovery operations are underway, but is there any advice that you can share now for residents that are out there, you know, for possible future storms, certain preventative measures that you guys are talking about?
Well, there's a bunch of things that really should come up. First and foremost is safety. As the chair of Fire Rescue and Emergency Medical Services, we often see pictures of young kids hanging out in the floodwaters with no shoes on or, you know, not too long ago I saw a guy on a surfboard. And that is not water you should be swimming in. It contains contaminants. It contains cesspool water. It contains backup from, you know, this is something that we should make sure everybody knows. Listen, when there's floodwaters, this is not a new pool for you.
Right.
It should be treated as hazardous waste until otherwise proven.
Right.
And we're not sure if there's electrification of the water and things like that. And that's why I try to encourage people to, you know, don't wade through it. It's not, you know, holy cow, look at the pond in my front yard now. But more importantly, what could possibly be in that pond? Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what the first foremost thing is, public safety. That's the primary constitutional job of every elected official, whether you're a village official, a town official, a county official, doesn't much matter. Way up to Walt Washington, your job is public safety first.
Sure.
So I encourage people to kind of stay out of the water and don't be so eager to go out there and take pictures via Facebook page or whatever, because it's dangerous.
Yeah.
Now, on the other aspect of recovery and continued storm monitoring, you know, we are working with every level of government, which is an amazing feat. That's not something we've seen in Long Island too much. We have our town. I speak to the town officials constantly.
Right.
I speak to the village officials constantly. Senator Murray and Assemblyman DeStefano are constantly on the phone with me. We have a outstanding line of communication on every level of government, including our new county executive, which has been in contact with our governor.
Right.
So that is a good thing. That's when things happen. So
sure.
There are plans for emergency. We are working on emergency plans to bridge a couple of the or block a couple of the breaches, if you will, on the island. And then also address the mainland coasting flooding that has really decimated some areas, such as, Linford Mazzarella's district. My district, from Blue Point to Bayport, we had three blocks up of flooding in every direction on the South Shore.
Wow.
And some lateral flooding from streams.
Sure.
So we have to look at that as well.
So we hear, you know, the analogy of Hurricane Sandy, but in some areas, this was actually worse for those areas than Sandy was.
It was worse. And you know what? Just before I forget, and I don't want to be remiss on any of this,
mm-hmm.
we have incredible public employees that are out there.
We do.
They are out there every day, pumping streets, plowing roads so far. But without them, we would be in so much trouble. They do a great job, and I did want to take an opportunity to thank all of our county employees for their hard work and dedication in securing public safety.
Yeah. No, I listen, you know, we've talked about this before, legislator. You know, the underlying value in the public employee isn't just the job that they do, but is the altruism that they have in their hearts. You know, they value being a public servant. They could find other jobs. They could do other things. They choose to be in an area where they can help community. And, you know, when I get calls from members about an upcoming storm, it's from the people who are going to go out and plow the roads, and their questions are never really about them. They want to make sure they have the equipment. They want to make sure they have the support, that they have the materials, that they're going to be able to get the job done. And it's great to work with folks that are focused on what the public needs are, and that the value in having the job for them isn't just, you know, a day's work and a day's pay, but also that it's helping the surrounding community.
But you know what I think often the public may remember or not remember is that these employees that are in the plows or in the, you know, the pump stations or whatever they happen to be assigned to that day,
right,
they are people from your community.
Yeah.
They're the guy you see in the bagel store on Sunday morning, right? I mean, there are local people that genuinely care about their neighbors. And that's why I am always encourage people that maybe may want to communicate them on a different level that, you know, have respect for them. They are your neighbor, and they're here trying to help.
Yeah. Neighbors, family, friends. Yeah, that is the thing. And, you know, people generally, and it's not a good or a bad thing, it's just a natural human behavior, they tend to refer to systems, you know, people as systems, right? So a person right. comes down to help out with something, and they may say, well, the county did, you know, but it wasn't the county. It was your neighbor. It was your friend. It was your family member. It was someone from the community that came down to help you. They happen to be working for the county, happen to be working for the town, they happen to be working for the state, wherever it is that they're working and helping out. But they're a person just like you, and they chose a job that puts them in harm's way to help you.
You know, it's absolutely true. What some people may not realize is that, and again, I did a short stint with the highway department in Brookhaven.
Right.
And, you know, my first storm was going in Wednesday, and I went home Sunday.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what these folks deal with every day.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And listen, you know, I want to touch a little bit more. You know, you had mentioned, you know, safety being one of the mandates of government. And, you know, health and safety really is that main driver for a lot of government services. And when you think of public safety, you know, certain jobs come right to mind. Fire department, police, EMS, all of that stuff. But public safety also, as you had aptly pointed out, is also public health, right? And so when you talk about floodwaters and people, you know, maybe coming across biological contaminants, not realizing how deep a section of water may be because you can only see the surface, so you think you're splashing around in a puddle and all of a sudden, you know, you're neck deep. But right. there's so many aspects, you know, and I think of, you know, the health department. And you know, the sanitarians, specifically the health sanitarians that go out and ensure that, you know, all of the food that's being served everywhere, you know, is safe for consumption, so that, you know, businesses face certain pressures. They've got bottom lines to worry about. They've got to keep, you know, their head above water. They got people on their payroll, and there may be moments of either chaos or laziness, and I don't want to assume one or the other, where bad things happen. And these public health sanitarians come out and they check on those things, and they issue fines if somebody's doing something the wrong way. We don't want people getting sick. And we've seen examples of that in the paper where, you know, maybe a restaurant wasn't necessarily on top of their game the way they needed to be, and folks got sick. And right. you know, I could run through every department and talk about different ways that the public is being protected. Their health and their safety is being protected by all of the services that Suffolk County provides, but it is a mandate of government. But one of the other things that you,
right.
one of the other things that you touched on is how you have this coordination now, and this is something you don't often hear about, but it's something that I'm seeing now. That coordination between the town, the county, the county executive going up to the governor's office and everything else. And I think that's really a testament to what we saw last year on Election Day and how things are coming together. You know, we've got a new county executive. We've got some changes on the legislature, new composition on the legislature, and things are coming together in such a great way. Something that you really want to see, where everybody is really focused on discussing and acting on what's in the best interest of the residents.
You know, I couldn't agree more. From day one, and you've known me for a bit now.
Sure.
I am clearly one that walks across the party lines to get things done. In the village of Patchogue, we did, you know, $13 million of wastewater management last year. We have a new mayor of Belport, young lady that has taken over Belport Village. Wonderful lady. And again, it's not about party, but that's an area I represent as the county legislator. So we have constant communication there as well. You really need to make it a point to always put your public first.
Right.
And it comes back to being the legislator of all the people all of the time. It's wildly important to have cooperation on every level of government. And if yelling and snarling at each other, well, that doesn't really get much done.
Well, you know, I guess I got to ask, you know, I've been around for a number of years with the previous administration and saw the relationship with the legislature. Saw the relationship that the unions had, the legislature had, other stakeholders and whatever else. And I think County Executive Romain, he represents a departure from that way of doing business. I mean, are you feeling that already at the legislature?
Absolutely. Something occurred, much like the Fire Island, you know, the county, there were county employees that were aware of the Fire Island breaches, but nobody thought to call the legislature. Legislator in the area, and give me a break.
Right.
So with the new county executive, you know, it's a benefit when he's done your job, when he knows the job that you have to do. And it's been it's like a breath of fresh air to be able to know that the first words out of his mouth is, what does the legislator say in the area?
Yeah.
Right? 1.5 million, a little over, a little under, depending on what report you look at, that's a lot of people to be responsible for. But each one of us is responsible for 75,000 somewhere in that region. And it's wildly important that he knows our job and knows that we need to be consulted because we have our finger on the pulse point of the problem.
Correct. Yeah.
Whatever it may
be. No, that is excellent. That is, again, you know, something I think that people – day-to-day people are going to, they're going to see the effect of this cooperation in government is going to have a direct impact on how fast problems are addressed and solved, and what the general mood is. You know, I mean, these contentious political fights tend to wear people down, and then again, you know, I talked about human nature and you know, referring to individuals as, you know, as systems, you know, and then you say, okay, well, you know, government doesn't work. Well, government's lots of things and is mostly people. And in terms of like elected leadership, you know, that's the stuff that I think people get frustrated by and get fatigued by. And having leadership in place on all levels of government that's cooperative and working for the people, that's going to have, I think, a huge effect on how, you know, again, how well services are provided.
Right. And, you know, the other aspect, too, is that we have to realize that the average taxpayer, the average voter, they are not into – they don't much care. They want someone that's going to serve their needs.
Right.
And they're tired of the squabbling and the national scene. They don't want to see it locally. And I think that here in the county, we do an outstanding job with that open communication because that's when things get done.
Right.
You know, perfect example is the epinephrine bill I wrote last year to put epinephrine auto-injectors in our police cars. Well, there's a problem with the state regulation. It's a matter of picking up the phone, calling Senator Murray and Assemblyman DeStefano and saying, hey, I need you to tweak your law so I can get it done. And that's already well in progress. We're working diligently to get there. And I think this year we'll see that tweak done, and we're going to be able to save lives with our brave men and women of law enforcement, which is an amazing feat.
Yeah.
You know, we're an incredible county. Our police officers are our EMTs. We have specialties in every possible field. Like, look at vector control.
Right.
You don't think much of it. They're the mosquito guys. But mosquitoes carry diseases.
Yep.
So think how important they are, right? There's so many different avenues that we have to make sure that we shore up and have the right resources there to properly serve the public.
Hey, listen, you know, speaking of vector control, you know, I've had conversations with people before, and they say, well, you know, what's the big deal, vector control? And I said, well, listen, you know, one, you touched on it correctly. These pests are carrying these diseases, and this could be an issue of public health. But then, you know, you think about, you know, well, it's just, you know, well, it's a laborer and a machine operator, and, you know, but they have to be trained in specialty chemicals. They have to know what they can treat an area with, what they can't treat an area with. They've got to protect their own health. They've got to protect the health of the public just in the course of doing their job. And when they do their job and they do their job well, it protects everybody's health. So, you know, these systems, you know, we say them simply, but they are much more complex. When you kind of zoom in on them, they're much more complex.
They're wildly important.
Yeah, yeah, no, very, very much so. So speaking of important things, you have a number of, on top of everything else you do, you know, which is going around and seeing everyone, making sure you're aware of what's going on in your district. You have a number of committees you have to serve on, you know, budget and finance, health, public works, human services, but you chair the fire, rescue, and emergency services. And that's a big department that does great things for Suffolk County. But why don't we talk a little bit about what it's like to be the chair of Fire, Rescue, and Emergency Services, we affectionately call FRES, and what initiatives you might have this year?
I mean, there is first off, Fire, Rescue, and Emergency Services, also our Office of Emergency Management, all under the FRES charter, along with our ambulances. People, I don't think they get it that, you know, our ambulance workers in this county, including the paid and not paid folks and volunteers, they're out, you know, in one district 1,400 times last year.
Right.
And in another district, it went to 4,100 times that ambulance rolled out to help people. But the back end of that is our fire rescue dispatchers, our 911 operators.
Right.
You know, our training at VEEB, the Vocational Education Extension Board, our fire school. There are so many employees that are involved in the back end and the preparation that, you know, recently we added, bipartisanly, I might add, $125,000 to the budget to make sure our firefighters and EMS workers are ready for hybrid or electric car fires because it's a different type of fire.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, these things are wildly important, and we have to make sure that John Fireman or Joe EMT or Susie EMT, whatever you want to do it, is trained appropriately to make sure that they get to go home at the end of that call.
Right.
So we just added $125,000 to their budget to ensure the money is there to do both hybrid learning and in-classroom learning for the new types of firefighting and EMS challenges of today's market.
Sure. And listen, you think of, you know, you talk about electric vehicles and you might think of a vehicle, but there are storage and distribution points for electric vehicles. And that is a whole nother ball of wax, right? Now, all of a sudden, instead of dealing with one electrical fire or electric vehicle fire, you could be dealing with multiple, whether it's a car lot or, you know, a facility that houses all of these batteries. And, you know, when one of these batteries arc and they're in proximity to other batteries, now that has a snowball effect, right? So it's a big deal. It is.
It absolutely is, and we have to make sure we're ready for these emergencies. You know, nobody's saying to get rid of electric cars, but we have to be ready when they go up.
Right.
In the town of Southampton, there was a vehicle fire that took almost 3 hours to put out, where the usual routine gasoline engine takes about 15, 20 minutes to put out.
Right.
It's a whole different fire.
Yeah.
So we have to train and be ready for that and change with the times.
Right.
Fire EMS is a ever-changing, ever-evolving, growing, or evolving industry. And we have to be ready for those changes here in Suffolk County.
Yeah. Well, you know, part of being prepared for stuff like this, conversation you and I have had multiple times, and along with other legislators, and you know, now even having these conversations with the county executive, is making sure that the 911 emergency call system is working properly. There's enough people there, that the materials are there that are necessary to do this job, that there is a fairness in doing this job, that attracts quality people that want to stay for a full career. You don't want right. Suffolk County, and we've seen this before, where Suffolk County was a training ground for other municipalities. People would come to Suffolk County, take the job because they were openings. They'd get all their training and certification, and off they went to another jurisdiction. There's a lot to be done there, but at no point in time should somebody call with an emergency, whether it's an electric vehicle or otherwise, and have to wait to speak to somebody. There should be somebody on the other end right away. You know, we worked with a bunch of other jurisdictions to have the state recognize these 911 call operators and dispatchers as first responders. But that was a step of many steps that are necessary to, you know, professionalize this career to make sure that we're getting the best and the brightest. You know, they deal with people just like police do in some of the worst moments of their lives. They may be on the phone for it as opposed to in person, but it still wears right. on them. You know, going back to that altruism, you know, they took this job because they care about people, and it wears on them. So, but this is something that we've talked about. You know, these are things that we, you know, government has to address to make sure that these services are there for the people in Suffolk County.
And you know, one of the benefits, and I try not to make it all about Dominic, but one of the benefits is that I have held a health line. I have started an IV at 3 in the morning in an upside-down car.
Yeah.
I have sat in a dispatch center during a busy storm season.
Yeah.
You know, experience, you can't explain what it's like to be in a dispatch center when, you know, all heck is breaking loose.
Yeah.
And you are the first line of defense. If you don't hit the button to get the calls out, they're not coming. So it is wildly important that we are ready for those challenges. And it may involve software upgrades. It may involve maybe a different way of transferring calls than the archaic picking up the phone. Hey, Green Park Ambulance, you got a call over here. You know, there has to be other systems. So this year we're going to be looking at some of those systems and find out how we transfer calls. And if you're able to transfer calls up electronically, then you don't necessarily, you free up a person and reduce the workload a little bit, which could be wildly important to not getting a, you have reached 911, please stand by for the next available operator.
Right.
So these are all things that we're looking at this year.
Yeah. You know, you say, you know, I don't want to make this all about me, but that's a huge value, right? The fact that you know and have real-world, firsthand experience with these types of situations, you know, what people are up against, and it helps inform your decision. And I think that's why your colleagues look to you, especially, you know, when we're talking about, you know, issues of fire rescue, emergency service, Office of Emergency Management, you know, they all have diverse backgrounds and may not have dealt with issues like the ones you're discussing firsthand, the way you dealt with it. So it's actually a value back to the taxpayer to have someone with your experience to know what questions to ask and how to prioritize the issues to get things fixed. You know, we talk about, you know, staffing and making sure all of these systems are responsive when it comes to the 911 call center. But we also spoke about how the health and safety, county government provides for the health and safety of people in a myriad of ways. And all departments, I think, are really suffering from staffing issues, recruitment, retention, you know, getting people in the door, getting them to stay. And that's something that, you know, is going to be an ongoing discussion, I think, this year and into the future, you know, trying to find ways to get the best and brightest to be the people that want to be on the other end of the phone call or provide that service that government provides to you.
Yeah, it's important to have quality people, but also they have to know they're valued. They have to know that we care about them. They are our employees, but they're also our residents.
Yeah.
So it's important to build them up and let them know, hey, you did an outstanding job on X, Y, and Z, and I want you to know that we recognize that. So we will be doing more of that as well. Now, that doesn't put anything in their checking account or pay their rent, but, you know, if you don't feel valued, it's any other job. If you don't feel valued, you know, it's just a job to you. If you feel valued and part of a team, well, then you are more eager to stay where you are, which is here in Suffolk County.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is very true. And so, listen, these discussions are going to have to go on, and you and I could probably sit and talk for another hour and a half about a bunch of different discussions, but we're running short on time. So I want to thank you again, my guest this morning, Dominic Thorne. He's the Suffolk County Legislator for the 7th District, Chair of Fire Rescue Emergency Services, puts in 70, 80 hours a week in his part-time position of legislator.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you. Like I say, I know how busy you are. I know all the things you're working on. I know some of the hot-button items you got going. So I appreciate you taking some time to speak to me today and the residents in Suffolk County.
Well, and we certainly appreciate let me be clear, we really appreciate the hard work and dedication of our employees, and we will continue to work to make it a great environment for them.
Much appreciated. And to our listeners, we'll speak to you next week.